Good morning and welcome to the Reloading Rag Chew, part of the Self Defense Radio Network. Happy to be with you guys this Monday morning. And let's see what's on the docket for today. Well, I think the biggest thing going on is I have started our first Mythbusters project for this group. It's going to be tumbling loaded rounds, which I know is a hot topic on the internet. It's a very controversial thing. I've seen it go both ways, back and forth. What's the controversy if you're unfamiliar with it? Well, the idea is that a lot of people like to, once a round is completely loaded, bullet in it, powder in it, primer in it, put it back into a dry tumbler, tumble it again. The idea here, which makes sense, is that will get rid of anything that was on the dies, any kind of, especially if you're shooting cast bullets and they were lubed, it'll get rid of that. It'll do kind of a final polish, a final cleanup for it. Now, the other side of the argument is that doing that tumble can cause the powder to break down into smaller pieces, which will change the burn rate. And there's evidence, for example, Hodgdon sells a powder that's specifically called the SSC or Super Shortcut, therefore somewhat implying that a shorter set of powder would create a different burn rate. I think the real questions here are, A, does tumbling loaded rounds cause the powder to be damaged in any way? And B, does that significantly change the burn rate? Or is the shortcut powder more so that it fits in the case better instead of changing the burn rate? So that's really what it comes down to as I see it. So how do we test this? Well, first, I think we need to look at the fact that there are different kinds of powders. There are widely available ball, flake, and stick or extruded powders, at least on the handgun side. On the rifle side, there are not really a whole lot of flake rifle powders. There are a few out there. They're mostly European, and actually when I was going through my stash of powder, I don't have any. So we'll get to how we deal with that in a little bit. In addition, the ball powder, I really don't think you'd see much breakdown on it. The stuff's already nearly like dust. Same with, there's one called a flattened ball, but it's basically just a tiny flake powder. So I don't think you're going to see a whole lot of powder breakdown on the ball ammo. It seems a little far-fetched to me. So on number two, on the flake powder, I could see some there. I could definitely see, because those flakes are pretty thin, you know, they're kind of wafer thin little, they look like little tiny crackers. I could see some breakdown there. And finally, on the stick powders or the extruded powders, I could definitely see some breakdown there. I mean, you're already dealing with, there's some questions out there as far as what cutting a powder will do if it's in a powder measure. Of should it cut that last grain in half, and how does that affect things? So those are the kinds of powder. That's my guess as far as what it would do. And then I think we need to look at the fact of it's very different between a rifle and a pistol case. Generally with rifle cases, most powders, you load them fairly full, at least up to the neck. There's very little airspace in there. I think as a result, on the rifle side, we're not going to see as much of a change. For the basic reason, there's not a lot of room for the powder to move around in there. It's very similar to how you pack boxes if you're going to ship them, and how, for example, Amazon does it. You know that when you send a package out with the postal service, it's going to get shaken all around, tossed all around. But if you pack that box completely full where the items can't move, even a fragile item will typically survive. The boxes where you see stuff gets damaged tends to be the boxes where there's a lot of airspace in them where the products can move around within the box. So I'm not sure we're going to see a huge change on the rifle stuff unless you're talking about a severely reduced load. On the pistol side is where we're more likely to see it, for the reason of most pistol loads have 25 to 50% of the case space free. And that's a lot more room for that powder to bounce around. Okay, so That's my view on how this is going to come into play and where the potential issues can be. So how do we test this? First, we choose a powder of each kind. We need a ball powder, we need a flake powder, we need a stick powder. That is pretty easy on the pistol side because all of those are readily available. On the rifle side, there's a lot of stick powders, there's a few ball powders, there are very few flake powders. However, I think that this is a good chance to test another part of the theory and kind of cross-check on the large space of there are powders that you can do reduced loads with. The most common ones are like unique, Universal, I think, can do some of it, but it's going to load a rifle case nowhere near full because the idea is it's more of like a plinking low recoil with a pistol powder. So I think that that's where we do the flake, and that will also give us an extreme example of a lot of space in that case for it to move around. So we pick our powders, we pick our cartridges. Now, one thing, I was talking this over with a buddy of mine, and I'm like, I've got to figure out a way to keep all these separate so that I know, hey, this one goes here and this one goes here. And he goes, well, why don't you just use different bullets? And I was like, well, and then I realized, yeah, I actually can, because we're not ever going to compare the performance of one cartridge loaded with a ball powder versus one loaded with a stick powder. We're comparing a ball versus a ball and a stick versus a stick. So as long as the bullets are consistent for all the stick powder cartridges and all the ball powder cartridges and all the flake powder cartridges, we'll be okay. So that's kind of how we're setting this up. I've already got 45 rounds loaded with, oh, I believe I used True Blue for the ball powder and I used 800X for the flake powder, which it's about as flake as a flake can get. I'm going to use Vitivori N310 in 38 special for the stick powder. And then on the rifle side, I decided I'm probably going to use my bolt action 308 just because that will reduce any effects of having to load it hot enough and make sure it functions in my ARs. So the only thing holding me up there is I need to get some kind of plinking bullets. I looked through my stock and everything that I've got left is kind of a high-end target bullet. Since we're not really caring about accuracy here, I don't really love the idea of wasting those. So that's the plan. I'm hoping to get all of the rounds loaded this week. And so that we can get them fired up and hopefully go to the range like next weekend and do this testing. So how are we going to do the testing? Well, I don't have a pressure gauge, a pressure trace, anything like that. I've looked at making my own in the past with an oscilloscope, but I think we're going to see a fairly clear response if we just chronograph the rounds. Obviously, increased pressure, more push behind the bullet. It should increase the velocity. The other thing that we can look for with the velocity is we can look for a major change, the standard deviation and the swing between the cartridges. That would indicate that some of them had powder breakdown and others did not. So I'm going to load up 10 of, well, 20 of each. 8 of them will be for each string, for the main reason of I'm shooting these through mostly 1911s and a 308 with a called a 10 round, but really an 8 round magazine. So 8 will get shot completely just like they came off the press. 8. The other 12, I loaded 20, will get tumbled. Of those, 4 of them I'm going to pull apart at random and put under the best lens I can figure out to try and basically get an eyeball on the powder. Measure the powder, and we can compare that to the stuff that comes right out of the canister. The other 8 will get shot, and the velocities will be recorded. So that's how it's going to work. I do want to wait till I have just about all of the rounds loaded and tumble them all together again because I'm using different bullets. I can then sort them back out later fairly easily. But I think that that's going to help a lot with the giving that extra more realistic. Because if you put 10 rounds in a dry tumbler, they're not going to touch each other very much. That's a fairly empty load. If I put 50 diff or 5 different 10 round groups in there, that's enough to provide some mass in the tumbler and give it something to bounce against. So I think that once I get them all loaded, I'll tumble them all, I'll sort them back out, and then we'll hit the range. So as part of this will be the first YouTube video related to this, turning this into a media group instead of just a podcast. So I don't want to show any of the loading part on Facebook because of the recent policies, stuff like that. I think we're okay doing the shooting part. There don't seem to be any rules against that. I don't think it's going to be a problem at all. So I'm going to post that up on the Facebook page and the website, and we'll have both. I'm also going to talk about the results on the podcast so that we're good there. Everything's taken care of. That's how that's going to work. If you guys have any questions, comments, if any of you know of a good flake rifle powder that is not some obscure European thing that I can get around here, let me know. My searches so far have turned up fairly fruitless. And if you got any comments about my test methods, let me know. I'd prefer to change it before I do the test rather than after. So, other news, I am in a position right now where I'm going to have to change where my reloading bench is for a temporary little while. As a result, I think I'm going to be building kind of a small portable bench. Right now, I use swappable heads that have each different press on them to go in the bench, and I think I can replicate that. And instead of having my current bench, which has places for two heads and three accessory heads, I can bring it down to just one that has one of each. Gonna probably make it a little bit nicer, but I think I'm gonna post up kind of the design that I come up with, the build process, all of that, because I know frequently when you're starting out reloading, that can be a big question. How do I build a reloading bench? What do I need? There's the easy button you can go and get. Harbor Freight has a really good little built together bench. Some people use the kind of 2x4 bracket bench things that Home Depot sells. Other people just use a toolbox. One of my good friends uses a Workmate, like one of the folding tooling things, and it works fine for him. There's a lot of ways to look at it. I've built several reloading benches and I've kind of got it down to what I like, and it'd be good to kind of show that off. So, and then finally, just to add to the controversy while we're talking about tumbling loaded rounds, I wanted to talk real briefly about a question that I see frequently on reloading forums, Facebook groups. I even see it on some non-reloading based groups where it just kind of comes up. And that is reloading for self-defense. So, two sides of thought here. One is, if I'm having to shoot somebody, it really shouldn't matter what I'm doing it with, and I trust my ammo more than I trust factory ammo. The other side is that if you do this, some lawyer is going to pick up on it and sue you for basically trying to create a round that does more damage, or the fact that you premeditated this far enough to load your own ammo. And it's a debate that I'm pretty sure is old as the internet itself. There's a few people in the kind of gun community, I'll call them gun celebrities, that have weighed in on this over the years. Some of the more prominent concealed carry members have said, no, you shouldn't do it. So, and I think it's a tough one. I spoke with a guy a while back. He was a recently graduated law student at the time, and he was also a reloader, and he had that question. And the topic kind of turned to, well, you've got the resources, why don't you find out? And he did. He took his logins and all of that that are into the legal databases. And based on his research, he only found a couple of cases where the fact that reloading ammo was used had come up at all. And in fact, it was nearly all cases where it was was this a suicide or was this a murder? I think the best example he came up with was a man who claimed his wife had shot herself, but the evidence on the powder burn suggested that it was not close enough, the gun was not held close enough for a suicide. Typically, if you go to the range and you put a gun up 3 inches from the cardboard and you shoot it, you'll see a very noticed powder burn on there. And they weren't seeing that. And the guy's answer was that his wife had weak hands and had asked him to download some, I think it was 38 specials for her, where there were a heavily reduced powder charge so that the recoil, she could handle it. So if you think of that, that means that you might not have had powder burning or might not have had an extensive a powder burning. Now, the problem was that apparently all of the rounds had gotten mixed up with different load amounts, and therefore no two or three rounds out of the same box had provided identical results to each other or another one. So basically the question, it wasn't a legal case, or it wasn't a civil case where it was you did this on purpose. It was, what was this? Was this a guy trying to cover his wife's murder, or was it that she just used a low enough charge round that it didn't do anything? So I think that's the biggest one he could find. I'm not gonna say, I'm not a lawyer, this research was done by a third party. I'm not gonna say that that's the only one out there, but that's where most of them came from. Now, things have been changing in time. This was 4 years ago or so that we were discussing this. Our society, if anything, has gotten more sue happy instead of less. And if anything, with the current culture, we're pushing away where everything is being blamed on a shooting. It's the gun's fault, it's the gun manufacturer's fault, it's the gun dealer's fault, it's the ammo manufacturer's fault, it's the police's fault, it's the fact that we have concealed carry fault, it's the Second Amendment's fault, it's the NRA's fault because, they like to pull the trigger on everybody. So, I think some of this may be changing, which is why I don't think we're going to come up with an answer here. I think that they will sue you because you used your unloaded round may be a bit overblown. The fact that we haven't seen it yet in any major case kind of lends itself to, I don't think it's as common. I'm sure that there's some unscrupulous lawyer out there that does it. But you also have to remember, in a lot of states, there's a rule that basically says if you are judged to be self-defense, there's some protection against lawsuits. So that may also come into account. Now, from a practicality standpoint, I think that there's two kind of issues that you need to look at. And one is factory ammo is very heavily tested, especially on the defense ammo, because that's what's used by police forces. They want hard data in selecting a round. And I found that a lot of reloaders don't go through the testing necessary to really check that. You can't just throw any hollow point into a round and it be a self-defense round. You need to have that hollow point at its optimum velocity for expansion, and you need to have that optimum velocity for the particular firearm and length of barrel that you're using. I actually read a very interesting article the other day about the technical differences between what they call duty ammo, which is what most police carry, and self-defense ammo. And basically, it came down to the duty ammo is typically meant to be fired out of a slightly longer barrel gun, like your average carry gun, a Glock 17 or a 20, the 21's not the full size, but basically a full size gun because you're going to carry it on your belt. Where self-defense ammo is designed to be carried out of more of a pocket gun with a shorter barrel. And that makes a lot of sense. And when you get right down to it, that's where you have that's where you have to do some additional research. So what would you need to check? And let's put the legal part completely aside here. And let's look at just effectiveness. For one, you need to make sure that whatever rounds you do function 100% in every gun that you might carry. So that's, you can't go out and put 50 through it. You've got to put, I don't think I would be comfortable doing this until I had 300 to 400 rounds of that particular load through a firearm. Number two, you need to test expansion. And there's a few ways to do this. The wet newspaper or wet phone book seem to be the most common. Obviously, the best is to actually mix up ballistics gelatin and try that. But basically, you need to make sure that at the velocity you are shooting, it's going to expand fully. And then third, which is kind of a minor thing, is the flash effect of a lot of the commercial self-defense ammo uses what they call low flash powder, or basically powder that isn't going to create a gigantic fireball when you shoot it at night. And obviously, like H110 makes a giant fireball. It's a complete laugh for that. But because of that, it's not the greatest self-defense powder because you're going to be blinding yourself every time you pull the trigger. In addition, you've got to take into some other factors. A lot of people on the small guns like Magna ported or factory ported guns. Because of their small size, it helps with the flip some. You need to make sure that you've got enough powder that's alleviating the gas that's coming out of that. So I would say if you want to carry your own self-defense rounds, you or self your own loaded self-defense rounds, you probably need to have 400 to 500 rounds of whatever it is downrange in various testing scenarios. Everything from expansion, penetration, muzzle flash, making sure it actuates the gun perfectly, making sure that you don't have any hang-ups. And at that point, that's when you could probably start to feel comfortable with it. Again, legal questions aside, that's something you should probably talk to your lawyer about, see what they think. Obviously, if your lawyer says, I don't, this is probably not a good idea, you may want to avoid it just because he's basically probably telling you this is going to get complicated and I'm not sure I can deal with it if it comes up. So, respect the guys that are going to actually be having to deal with this if it comes down to it. So, that's kind of my view on it. For that very reason, I carry factory loaded self-defense ammo. I've not spent the time to develop it. I've looked into making some ballistics gelatin. It doesn't actually look that hard, but you start getting into needing to test so many different permutations of things and so many different rounds that, yes, self-defense ammo is not cheap. It usually hovers, even for the pistol calibers, around $1 a round or 75 cents a round, which is 3 or 4 times. But so I can spend the time and the money to load up 500 test rounds so that I get 20 for my carry gun, or I can just go to the store, buy some that's well rated, run a box of it through my carry gun, and give it a good test and kind of be done. So that's kind of where I come from on that, of I don't think it is inherently wrong to shoot your hand loaded ammo, carry it in your self-defense gun. I think that it requires more testing than I'm willing to do, and more testing than most reloaders are willing to do or have the time to do. So that's why I don't. In the future, that could change. I think for me, it would change greatly if I standardized around one self-defense caliber, because right now I carry 389 and 38, and occasionally 45. And that's part of it. I don't, you think 500 rounds, but it'd have to be 500 of each of those. And it really needs to be that per gun. So I think for someone who carries the same gun over and over, they have their carry gun, it's the same thing, then it makes more sense because it's a little bit easier. There's less permutations, there's less to test. So that, think about it. Like I said, I don't think it's the giant legal issue that's out there. Not that that couldn't change. I don't put anything past lawyers to make changes to the world in the middle of while everyone else is trying to do real work. No offense to the lawyers out there. I used to work for you. I used to work with you guys, and most of you guys are good. There's just a few of you that kind of screw it up for the rest of you. But just things to think about, and that's if you're going to carry a hand load, make sure it's well tested for all factors, not just that it makes the gun go bang. So with that, if anybody has any comments on the testing procedures we're going to use for the tumbled cases, or if anyone has any comments on my views on reloaded ammo for concealed carry, please let me know. Otherwise, I will talk to you guys next week. Hopefully, I'll have all the rounds loaded up next week and we can hit the range. And I think I'll do a little show-off video on the lab radar too, because I see that one popping up, and I know we did a previous episode on various chronograph options, but that'll be a good time to kind of show that off. Well, have a good one, have a good day, and happy reloading.